Hello, and welcome back to Off the Deaton Path. My name is Stan Deaton with the Georgia Historical Society, and we welcome you to this podcast for the week of Halloween, October 31st, 2018. This week for Halloween, we thought we'd do something special, and like last year's Halloween podcast, I wanted to share a ghost story with you. Last year, I read The Clock by William Fryer Harvey, and it proved to be very popular, so I wanted to do that again this year. This one is by author Ramsey Campbell. Campbell is a British author born in 1946, one of the foremost horror writers of our time. He's the author of over 30 novels and hundreds of short stories, many of them considered to be classics in the field. He is considered to be the equal of some of the great horror fiction writers of all time, like H.P. Lovecraft and Algernon Blackwood. The story I'm reading today is entitled Call First, first published in 1975. I hope you enjoy it. Call First by Ramsey Campbell. It was the other porters who made Ned determined to find out who answered the phone in the old man's house. Not that he hadn't wanted to know before. He felt it was his right almost as soon as the whole thing had begun, months ago. He'd been sitting behind his desk in the library entrance, waiting for someone to try to take a bag into the library so he could shout after them that they couldn't, when the reference librarian ushered the old man to Ned's desk and said, "Let this gentleman use your phone." Maybe he hadn't meant every time the old man came to the library, but then he should have said so. The old man used to talk to the librarian and tell him things about books even he didn't know, which was why he let him phone. All Ned could do was feel resentful. People weren't supposed to use his phone, and even he wasn't allowed to phone outside the building. And it wasn't as if the old man's calls were interesting. Ned wouldn't have minded if they'd been worth hearing. "I'm coming home now." That was all he ever said. Then he'd put down the receiver and hurry away. It was the way he said it that made Ned wonder. There was no feeling behind the words. They sounded as if he were saying them only because he had to, perhaps wishing he needn't. Ned knew people talked like that. His parents did in church, and most of the time at home. He wondered if the old man were calling his wife, because he wore a ring on his wedding finger, although in the claw, where a stone should be, was what looked like a piece of yellow fingernail. But Ned didn't think he could be his wife. Each day the old man left the library at the same time. So why would he bother to phone? Then there was the way the old man looked at Ned when he phoned, as if he didn't matter, and couldn't understand the way most of the porters looked at him. That was the look that swelled up inside Ned one day and made him persuade one of the other porters to take charge of his desk, while Ned waited to listen in on the old man's call. The girl who always smiled at Ned was on the switchboard, and they listened together. They heard the phone in the house ringing, then lifted, and the old man's call and his receiver going down. Nothing else, not even breathing, apart from the old man's. "Who do you think it is?" the girl said. But Ned thought she'd laugh if he said he didn't know. He shrugged extravagantly and left. Now he was determined. The next time the old man came to the library, Ned phoned his house, having read what the old man dialed. When the ringing began, its pulse sounded deliberately slow, and Ned felt the pumping of his blood rushing ahead. 7 trills, and the phone in the house opened with a violent click. Ned held his breath, but all he could hear was his blood thumping his ears. "Hello," he said, after silence cleared his throat. "Hello." Perhaps it was one of those answering machines people in films used in their offices. He felt foolish and uneasy greeting the wide, silent metal ear and put down the receiver. He was in bed and falling asleep before he wondered why the old man should tell an answering machine that he was coming home. The following day, in the bar where all the porters went at lunchtime, Ned told them about the silently listening phone. "He's weird, that old man," he said. But now, the others had finished joking with him, they didn't seem interested, and he had to make a grab for the conversation. "He reads weird books," he said, "all about witches and magic. Real ones, not stories." "Now tell us something we didn't know," someone said, and the conversation turned its back on Ned. His attention began to wander. He lost his hold on what was being said. He had to smile and nod as usual when they looked at him, and he was thinking, "They're looking at me like the old man does. I'll show them. I'll go in his house and see who's there. Maybe I'll take something that'll show I've been there. Then they'll have to listen." But next day at lunchtime, when he arrived at the address he'd seen on the old man's library card, Ned felt more like knocking at the front door and running away. The house was menacingly big, the end house of a street whose other windows were brightly bricked up. Exposed foundations, like broken teeth, protruded from the mud that surrounded the street, while hundreds of yards away stood a five-story crescent of flats that looked as if it had been designed in sections to be fitted together by a two-year-old. Ned tried to keep the house between him and the flats as he peered in the windows. All he could see through the grimy front window was bare floorboards. When he coaxed himself to look through the side window, the same. He dreaded being caught by the old man, even though he'd seen him sitting behind a pile of books 10 minutes ago. It had taken Ned that long to walk here. The old man couldn't walk so fast, and there wasn't a bus he could catch. At last, Ned dodged around the back and peered into the kitchen. A few plates in the sink, some tins of food, an old cooker. Nobody to be seen. He returned to the front, wondering what to do. Maybe he'd knock, after all. He took hold of the bar of the knocker, trying to think what he'd say, and the door opened. The hall leading back to the kitchen was long and dim. Ned stood shuffling indecisively on the step. He would have to decide soon, for his lunch hour was dwindling. It was like one of the empty houses he'd used to play in with the other children, daring each other to go up the tottering stairs. Even the things in the kitchen didn't make it seem lived in. He'd show them all. He went in. Acknowledging a vague idea that the old man's companion was out, he closed the door to hear if they returned. On his right was the front room. On his left, past the stairs and the phone, another of the bare rooms he'd seen. He tiptoed upstairs. The stairs creaked and swayed a little, perhaps unused to anyone of Ned's weight. He reached the landing, breathing heavily, feeling dust chafe his throat. Stairs led up to a closed attic door, but he looked in the rooms off the landing. Two of the doors, which he opened stealthily, showed him nothing but boards and flurries of floating dust. The landing in front of the third looked cleaner, as if the door were often opened. He pulled it toward him, holding it up all the way so it didn't scrape the floor, and entered. Most of it didn't seem to make sense. There was a single bed with faded sheets. Against the walls were tables and piles of old books. Even some of the books looked disused. There were black candles and racks of small cardboard boxes. On one of the tables lay a single book. Ned padded across the fragments of carpet and opened the book in a thin path of sunlight through the shutters. Inside the sagging covers was a page which Ned slowly realized had been ripped from the Bible. It was the story of Lazarus. Scribbles that might be letters filled the margin, and at the bottom of the page was written page 491. Suddenly inspired, Ned turned to that page in the book. It showed a drawing of a corpse sitting up in his coffin, but the book was all in the language they sometimes used in church, Latin. He thought of asking one of the librarians what it meant. Then he remembered that he needed proof he'd been in the house. He stuffed the page from the Bible into his pocket. As he crept swiftly downstairs, something was troubling him. He reached the hall and thought he knew what it was. He still didn't know who lived in the house with the old man. If they lived in the back, perhaps there'd be signs in the kitchen. Though if it were his wife, Ned thought as he hurried down the hall, she couldn't be like Ned's mother, who would never have left torn strips of wallpaper hanging at shoulder height from both walls. He'd reached the kitchen door when he realized what had been bothering him. When he'd emerged from the bedroom upstairs, the attic door had been open. He looked back involuntarily and saw a woman walking away from him down the hall. He was behind the closed kitchen door before he had time to feel fear. That came only when he saw that the back door was nailed rustily shut. Then he controlled himself. She was only a woman. She couldn't do much if she found him. He opened the door minutely. The hall was empty. Halfway down the hall, he had to slip into the side room, heart punching his chest, for she'd appeared again from between the stairs and the front door. He felt the beginnings of anger and recklessness, and they grew faster when he opened the door and had to flinch back as he saw her hand passing. The fingers looked famished, the color of old lard with long yellow cracked nails. There was no nail on her wedding finger, which wore a plain ring. She was returning from the direction of the kitchen, which was why Ned hadn't expected her. Through the opening of the door, he heard her padding upstairs. She sounded barefoot. He waited until he couldn't hear her, then edged out into the hall. The door began to fall open with a faint creak, and he drew it stealthily closed. He paced toward the front door. If he hadn't seen her shadow creeping down the stairs, he would have come face to face with her. He was listening behind the kitchen door and near to panic when he realized she knew he was in the house. She was playing a game with him. At once, he was furious. She was only an old woman. Her body beneath the long white dress was sure to be as thin as her hands. She could only shout when she saw him. She couldn't stop him leaving. In a minute, he'd be late for work. He threw open the kitchen door and swaggered down the hall. The sight of her lifting the phone receiver broke his stride for a moment. Perhaps she was phoning the police. He hadn't done anything. She could have her Bible page back. But she had laid the receiver beside the phone. Why? Was she making sure the old man couldn't ring? As she unbent from stooping to the phone, she grasped two uprights of the banisters to support herself. They gave a loud, splintering creak and bent together. Ned halted, confused. He was still struggling to react when she turned toward him, and he saw her face. Part of it was still on the bone. He didn't back away until she began to advance on him, her nails tearing new strips from both walls. All he could see was her protruding eyes, unsupported by flesh. His mind was backing away faster than he was, but it had come up against a terrible insight. He even knew why she'd made sure the old man couldn't interrupt until she'd finished. His calls weren't like speaking to an answering machine at all. They were exactly like switching off a burglar alarm. That concludes our special Halloween podcast and a reading of the short story Call First by Ramsey Campbell, first published in 1975. We hope you enjoyed it. The hardest working engineer in show business, now the czar of our Tallahassee office and the captain of the GHS under 40 soccer team, is our very own Brendan Cannonball Crellin. Our mailman this week and every week is Crimson Tide fan extraordinaire, one Gary F. Taylor, born and raised, that's right, who is away this week attending the Half Moon Bay Art and Pumpkin Festival in Half Moon Bay, California, but he promises to be back next week. Our legal counsel this week and every week is provided by the law offices of Gallipo and Taylor, where their motto is, just because you did it doesn't mean you're guilty. Catering this week provided by Hagee's House of Tacos, home of Big Al's Sautéed, Hand Grenade, Air Raid, Free Trade, Sling Blade, Lieutenant Junior Grade, Financial Aid, Naval Blockade, 100 Degrees Centigrade, Combination in Restraint of Trade, Eat It and You'll Wish You Had Medicaid, Drippy Enchilada. If you have an iPhone, you can find our podcast at the App Store or on the podcast app on your phone. If you have an Android, look for us at Google Play. Tell your friends and family about this because there's no need to be suffering through all of this alone. You can find out everything about the Georgia Historical Society at georgiahistory.com and the Georgia History Festival at georgiahistoryfestival.org. Please also check out my blog and similarly painful podcast, except for when I have a guest star, at deedenpath.georgiahistory.com. If you have any comments about the show or about life in general, please drop me a line at sdeaton@georgiahistory.com. As always, thank you for listening. We hope you'll come back next week. Happy Halloween, everybody, and so long.